2. One People. Editorial, East Midwood Bulletin, June 21, 1946. Although Ruth's immediate family was not devoutly religious, Jewish traditions were very much a part of her childhood. Her mother, Celia, lit candles every Friday night, and at Hanukkah, all the grandchildren gathered to receive one silver dollar each as Hanukkah gelt, money, from their grandfather. Ruth and her parents regularly joined the annual gathering of aunts and uncles and cousins for the Seders held by her paternal grandparents on the first and second nights of Passover. Her fondest memories were those Seders when she got to ask the traditional Seder questions, beginning with, "Why is this night different from all other nights?" That, Ruth later remarked, was always the best part of the Seder for me, that the youngest child, which I was for a time, got to ask the questions, and then the whole rest of the evening was providing answers. This may have been the first sign of Ruth's future role as one of the most active and precise questioners on the United States Supreme Court bench. From childhood onward, Ruth especially valued the reverence for justice and learning that was part of her Jewish heritage. She enjoyed studying Hebrew and the history of the Jews, and was especially moved by the life of Deborah, the general, judge, and prophet, as recounted in Judges 4 and 5, and in the Song of Deborah. "Awake, awake, Deborah! Awake, awake, strike up the song! Up, Barak, and take your captives, O son of Abinoam!" But from a young age, Ruth also resented what she saw as sometimes rigid adherence to seemingly hypocritical rules and the inferior role assigned to women. Her mother, Celia, told her stories about Celia's Orthodox father, including a childhood memory of what started out as a happy Saturday afternoon. Celia watched her brother ride his shiny new bicycle, which he had bought with his hard-earned dollars and dimes. But the happy afternoon dissolved into an anger and tear-filled evening when their father destroyed the bicycle with an axe as punishment for bike riding on the Sabbath. And Ruth could not understand, in those days when only Jewish boys were ushered into adulthood with a religious celebration when they turned 13, why her cousin Richard got to have a bar mitzvah, but there was no comparable ceremony for me. Ruth attended various synagogues during her childhood, first a Reform temple and then an Orthodox synagogue where the women were relegated to the balcony, before finding the best fit at a conservative temple, the East Midwood Jewish Center. There she spent Sunday mornings learning about Jewish history, holidays, and ceremonies, gained a beginner's acquaintance with the Hebrew language, and at age 13 was confirmed. A ceremony introduced in part to entice girls to continue their religious studies, since only boys could be bar mitzvahed. Ruth and her classmates talked about the creation of a Jewish state and placed coins in their tzedakah boxes to pay for planting trees in Israel. Ruth also authored two pieces in the East Midwood Bulletin's 1946 religious school graduation issue. One was a biographical tribute to Rabbi Stephen S. Wise on the occasion of his 72nd birthday, which included 13-year-old Ruth's praise of Rabbi Wise's work for women's suffrage. "He was champion of every righteous cause. Jew and Gentile alike came to hear him. He was a valiant fighter for women's suffrage and among the first American Zionists." The other piece, the lead article in that issue of the Bulletin, follows. Bulletin of the East Midwood Jewish Center, 1625 Ocean Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, Volume 13, June 21, 1946, Sivan 22, 5706, Number 42. One People. The war has left a bloody trail and many deep wounds not too easily healed. Many people have been left with scars that take a long time to pass away. We must never forget the horrors which our brethren were subjected to in Bergen-Belsen and other Nazi concentration camps. Then, too, we must try hard to understand that for righteous people, hate and prejudice are neither good occupations nor fit companions. Rabbi Alfred Bettelheim once said, "Prejudice saves us a painful trouble, the trouble of thinking." In our beloved land, families were not scattered, communities not erased, nor our nation destroyed by the ravages of the World War. Yet dare we be at ease? We are part of a world whose unity has been almost completely shattered. No one can feel free from danger and destruction until the many torn threads of civilization are bound together again. We cannot feel safer until every nation, regardless of weapons or power, will meet together in good faith, the people worthy of mutual association. There can be a happy world, and there will be once again, when men create a strong bond towards one another, a bond unbreakable by a studied prejudice or a passing circumstance. Then and only then shall we have a world built on the foundation of the fatherhood of God, and whose structure is the brotherhood of man. Ruth Bader, Grade 8. June 1946 was a joyous time for Ruth's parents. The long war years were finally over. Ruth had just been confirmed by Rabbi Harry Halpern, the same rabbi who had married her parents nearly 20 years earlier, and on June 24th they watched with pride as Ruth and her classmates marched into the auditorium for their eighth grade graduation. The school orchestra played Sir Edward Elgar's Land of Hope and Glory. Ruth, first in her class of 144 students, gave the valedictory speech. The family's happiness was short-lived. Just as Ruth entered adolescence and started high school, her mother was diagnosed with cervical cancer. Celia had her first operation when Ruth was 13, and Ruth's high school years were punctuated by her mother's hospital stays and haunted by her pain. In the 1940s, there was no such thing as chemotherapy, and by the time the doctors diagnosed the cancer, it had already spread. At that time, such a diagnosis was almost always a death sentence, and many family members would not even say the word cancer, referring to it only as C. Instead of letting her mother's illness interfere with her studies, Ruth immersed herself in academics and extracurricular activities, relying on a routine of hard work, discipline, and little sleep to carry her along, a pattern she would repeat during times of adversity throughout her life. In addition to being an honor roll student and earning top grades, Ruth was active in student government and was a cello-playing member of the high school orchestra. She also belonged to the Go-Getters Booster Club, whose members sold tickets to school sporting events and in return were awarded coveted shiny black jackets with gold letters. She was also a twirler, performing with her baton at football games and even twirling her way through a Manhattan parade. Her serious study habits and academic achievements notwithstanding, Ruth's classmates did not think of her as a nerd or bookworm. One classmate recalled that Ruth was beautiful, outgoing, and friendly, not buddy-buddy with the world, but she was very popular. According to another classmate, she had this very quiet warmth and a kind of magnetism. As Ruth neared the end of her senior year, her mother's health took a sharp turn for the worse. In a futile attempt to prolong Celia's life, the doctors gave her an aggressive round of radiation treatment, which did nothing to relieve her pain, but instead made her violently ill and increased her suffering. The week before Celia died, she learned that Ruth, slated to graduate the following Tuesday, June 27th, near the top of her class, had been chosen as one of a select few to be on a roundtable forum of honor that would present commencement remarks at graduation. Neither Ruth nor Celia would be able to attend. Celia Bader died at home that Sunday, June 25th, 1950, at the age of 48. She was buried Monday afternoon next to her firstborn daughter, Marilyn. Ruth missed Tuesday's high school graduation ceremony to stay home with her grieving father.